That's a brilliant ball.
Not sure if it was inadvertent or not, but brilliant indeed. Pelayo has a go from distance, and that should do it. Mexico in stoppage time with an exclamation point on a night to remember here in Southern California.
Hello. I completely forgot I was taking waiting for you to start this podcast. Hello, folks. It is I, Courtney Stith, joined by my co-host, Andre Carlisle, and this is an episode of Diaspora United. Following some very late nights watching the U.S. Women's National Team. But before I get into it, Andre, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. Anticipating my mood will deteriorate as we talk about what we're going to talk about. But, you know, we'll find. I'll try to make it fun.
I feel the exact same way. If we recorded before I accidentally passed out on my couch, well, my parents' couch for 2 hours this evening, where my mom said, I tried to wake you up and you just couldn't. And I was like, well, I also have a feeling my mood might deteriorate the deeper we delve into this game because many things have happened. Many things have happened. But before we get started, we're going to do what we always do, which is read a review. Please rate and review the podcast and share it with all your friends. And leave a dad joke in it, and also leave Andre a middle name. Give Andre a middle name. He has 7 at the moment. Maybe one day, or maybe next podcast, I will read through all of Andre's middle names because he has loads and they're very fun. So if you want to leave a middle name for Andre, please leave it in a review.
Or just a dad joke. That'll be just fine. Keep doing what you're doing, people.
If you want a gold star, do both. Leave a review. And, all right, leave a review, leave a dad joke, and give Andre another middle name. But this review is from Jade Dragon 13, and they say, I laughed so hard at your portion on Lindsey Horan's comments about her mother. Your conversation cracked me up so much I had to go back and listen again. Very funny take. Thank you for giving me such a good laugh, and thanks for all you do. I appreciate your perspective. By the way, just to comfort you, schools do teach phonics again. Hot and heavy for the schools, I know. And then in quotes, I am a teacher. And besides the fact that that does give me a bit of calm about kids learning phonics, because I know for a little bit they weren't, and we already know that people struggle with reading comprehension. And I was like, and they can't sound out words? Oh no.
So I'm probably betraying some information. I probably shouldn't, but I'm gonna, because it's my podcast, and I'm gonna do what I want. I love my sister. She's great. Okay. She's a couple years younger than me. I grew up with phonics and she did not. And the contrast between like how we kind of like can figure stuff out in the English language is like, she's really smart. She got master's degrees. Like she's not like a dumb person. But like, and not saying that's even like the measurement of dumb or whatever, but like, just it took her a lot to figure out, like, to get through like English classes. She had tutoring and stuff. Like, it was just a really big miss. And I don't know why they stopped. I don't really know what was going on in Virginia at the time, but there was a moment when they stopped and it was noticeable. That's all I'm gonna say.
Wow. I definitely learned phonics. I was not hooked. I did not do the hooked on phonics, but we definitely learned phonics. And yeah, that's, I actually have several Roman empires. One of them is Lindsey Horan dragging her mom in the New York Times. And then one of them is that kids were not being taught phonics and thus could not read. It's good to know they're being taught phonics. Fortunately, I still don't think that they're very good at reading. And my third is now how a majority of Gen Z and Gen Alpha are secretly technologically illiterate. We'll save that for another time.
Yeah.
I was like, but that's my new Roman Empire.
Yes, and I do want to thank you for one of your Roman empires, because we got a lot of response online about you continuously bringing up
the
New York Times. It spawned a lot of comments, and people just keep going back and posting the clip and talking about it because it is hilarious. And I was like responding to somebody saying, like, every time I thought we were going to move on, you bring it back. And I was like happy that you did bring it back, because it just made me laugh all over again. It's like, that really happened.
I like am still like you, the podcast still processing. That's me on those comments. I'm still there, still thinking about it. That's actually a perfect segue into the match of the U.S. losing 2-0 to Mexico, because I was like, oh, what did her mom tell her after this game?
Her mom and Julie Fowler think she played great. I think that's what we learned.
Like, oh, like now every time the U.S. like loses or has a bad performance, I then also immediately go back to that moment, because I'm like, you're really mad at the coverage and people basically not calling out the U.S. for like at times not playing well, which to be fair, this podcast and a whole bunch of other people have. Maybe just not hearing it. You know, if she's yeah, a loyal listener, I would be deeply surprised. But I was like, whatever. She's probably not. Probably, if she was, she'd probably have us blocked on a few things. But I was like, we've been saying it. And yeah, so like perfect segue into this episode. But before we segue, yes, please leave a review. We love reading them. Love having jokes off them. Love having jokes off Andre having another middle name, or cringing because of a dad joke. So thank you, JDragon13, for that. The U.S. lost 2-0 to Mexico. The first, Andre, you ready for this stat? It is, and don't you say it, but it is a good stat. It is the first win Mexico's had against the U.S. on U.S. soil. First
ever.
That
is a good stat. As stats from Courtney, these stats are always good stats.
Oh, right. I do have a lot of really good stats about this game. But that I was like, that's that first ever loss for the U.S. on U.S. soil at the hands of Mexico is absolutely huge. And I just want to like get our immediate reactions to this. But I know for me, like, it was kind of one of those games, like, you know, come with me on this journey. You know when, like, we're watching a game and there are two teams playing really, really well, and then, like, one team just, like, is better than the other, has a better game plan, is executing better, etc. And it's, like, hats off to them. I will say that was not this game. However, hats off to Mexico. They played, like, they got their tactics on spectacularly. I think the idea of just coming out with the high press that we had seen them kind of deploy basically over this entire group stage tournament worked really, like, really, really well for, to combat the U.S. And also, it's just, like, honestly, it kind of reminds me, I think we've used this phrase on the podcast, where when someone pops you in the mouth and you're just kind of, like, shook, like, that's kind of what this game felt like to me, of Mexico doing that to the U.S. I think they just popped the U.S. in the mouth, and the U.S. was just fully unable to recover throughout this entire match. But truly, hats off to Mexico. They're like, I'm telling you, that game plan, they executed it to perfection. Obviously, you know, and we'll get into this, but like, you can't always force a player into a mistake. Like, you can try to, but at times a player, like, you can't actually, like, physically force them into a mistake. But the way Mexico set up led the U.S. to making a lot more mistakes, unless they were able to pounce on those balls and convert their chances. And also, I just want to give a hats off to Liga MX Femenil off the top of this podcast, because we have been watching Liga MX Femenil. I think we both call it a shoot-a-shoot league, mm-hmm. which, for soccer sickos, is quite simply just fun. You will see players playing in Mexico that will just shoot from literally anywhere. And sometimes it doesn't always work out, but when it does, it's fun. And that's a skill that is not prioritized here in the U.S. throughout U.S. soccer, throughout the like U.S. national team systems, youth national team systems across the college game. The concept of like really prioritizing shooting is, or sorry, the concept of shooting is like, and that skill is not really prioritized here in the U.S. And I think it is something that is 100% prioritized in Mexico, especially in that shoot-a-shoot league. And I think those two goals are the perfect example of that. For, like, Ovalle to have that looping ball, like, and I mean, we can get into it. But Andre, just before I continue talking, Andre, what were your initial thoughts off the match?
No, I mean, I know that in this podcast, we're going to focus on the U.S. women's national team a bit and what went wrong there, because I think a lot went wrong. I don't necessarily think that they could have easily beaten Mexico. Mexico were absolutely up for this game. And as you said, they got their game plan spot on and the execution was super good. Like, the midfield was really tight. They were really good. And the U.S. didn't help by playing very narrow. But, well, again, we'll get into that. So I don't want to come off and just say, like, it's all the U.S. I do think there's a lot the U.S. did wrong. I think there were a lot of reactions to what was happening that were wrong. And honestly, shocking and honestly very familiar, which really pissed me off, if I'm being honest.
I had more flashbacks in the middle of that game.
Yes, I think from the starting 11 to the halftime changes to late subs to not understanding kind of what is actually happening to you on the pitch and how to counter it, I think there was a lot wrong from the U.S. perspective. But I also think Mexico balled out. They absolutely earned that win. I mean, minute 1 to 93 when the ref called it, which I, honestly,
93, not 95.
Hey, listen.
That is a thing. No one has mentioned that. I was like, the ref called the game to, and like, look, did I think the U.S. was going to score in those 2 minutes? No. However, I was like, is after.
Nah. No. I'm gonna tell you right now. I'm gonna tell you right now where I'm at with this.
Wild.
Yes, it was technically, not even technically. It was legitimately, like realistically, it was 2 minutes early. But I'm from like back in the day. I remember like watching like N1 tapes on basketball. Like if you hit a move so nasty that like the whole gym erupts, it's game over. It don't matter how many minutes are left. It don't matter what the score is. And I feel like that goal by Paleo, like that was it. That was it. The game was over. No more. Nobody needed to exert any more energy. She cut up, diced up, cut inside, hit that banger, and it was a wrap. And I feel like, yeah, that ends a game. That absolutely should end the game. And I was happy that it ended the game, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it more from like a, hey, friends, can we be serious?
Like, I mean, the, consistency, like, and yes,
like,
I get
the
it,
game,
but also
go out past like whatever it was. Because also, I mean, like if you technically want to talk about it, like since she scored in the celebrations, there was technically even another minute off of like another minute to add to that.
And I was like,
this game was called early, and I was like, huh? What? And I was like, is this AFCON? Is it that ref that we use in the meme all the time saying call the game, but that we say no, jokingly.
That's just a ref that understood the assignment is what that was. That was a ref that understood what was happening, saw the goal, and was like, yo, I don't need to see anything else. Like, it's
she
a ref.
Said,
yeah, she said, that's losses. It. You know how when boxers, like, when a ref jumps in and like calls the fight, just puts their hands up like, hey, no more, they can't take no more? That's what that was. That was like, go back in the court. Like, the fight is over. The fight's done. It's a wrap. Sorry. Nope. No more. I don't care how much time is on the clock or left in the round. It's a wrap.
Yeah. Yeah. That was just like absolutely baffling to me. I was like, excuse me? I was like, referee? Also, I was like, Mexico could have scored a third. We could have. What, Andre, what if there could have been another banger? And they took away another banger.
More likely.
More likely another banger. But yes, so the ref called the match to 2 minutes early, which was wild. Ended at 90+3 instead of the initial after having a supposed 5 minutes of minimum of 5 minutes of stoppage time. But yes, the U.S. was down 2-0 at that point. And so it was a little bit of a stop the bleeding type call. But yeah, just digging into this match, Mexico played, like, literally executed that game plan to perfection. They were really good at just stifling everything the U.S. has done or was trying to do. Ovalle, I mean, that goal. I just want to watch it on repeat. I did have some questions. And, like, not even because y'all know how I feel about Becky Sauerbrunn. my fellow Who. She's one of my faves. But like obviously she makes a mistake. I was in that moment, I was confused about two things. One, why she didn't like try to head the ball back to Nair or something like that. Or even just do like the standard like shield, like try to get in front of her, get fouled, so nothing comes of it. Because I feel like that's like, especially for a player like Becky, who's been on the national team for such a long time, like those are, I feel like those are like two qualities that like she really hangs her hat on, of having really good positioning and really good decision making. And so in that moment, we did not see either of those. I was also a little bit confused about Alyssa Nair, of why she tried to stand up and defend Ovi instead of going for the ball, which I know people were like, she could have given a penalty if she doesn't do it correctly. And I'm like, okay, you get the penalty, but like, we saw Mexico A, already miss a penalty in this tournament, but B, like, it's the number one, it's an immediate try not to get scored on versus just like the way it happened was like, I was like, what is going on in this moment? And there very much also did not seem like a lot of communication between Becky Sauerbrunn and Alyssa Nair, which was baffling to me. Obviously, that happens in the 38th minute of the first half. Then we go to halftime. At halftime, we get some substitutions in. We get Alex Morgan in and Emily Sonnet in.
And what were they supposed to do?
Well, yeah, it's for Lynn Williams and I believe Sophia Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, two things. First, you subbed on a midfielder for an attacker.
Mm-hmm.
When you need a goal, why? I was like, why? Also, what was Alex Morgan supposed to do? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. And this is not even a knock of Morgan as a player, but like you saw in the first half, Sophia Smith get on the ball, and she was immediately surrounded by four players. Like, immediately swarmed. Yeah. And if we just want to talk plain numbers, if you are one person being surrounded by four, that means there are other people on the pitch that are in open space. Which means, like, and so, like, thinking about the ways that the U.S. also did not try to combat that high press, I feel like I saw them only do something once to get around the high press, which was playing very quick one-touch football to quickly get around that high press, because that's, like, there are other ways to do it, but that's the very traditional way to beat a high press, outside of like basically forcing players into moments of individual brilliance. And so I was confused about that at halftime. Then the game goes on. The U.S. basically creates nothing. Very few chances toward the later half of the games. Yeah, Corbin Albert comes in. Jaden Shaw comes in. I don't think I'm missing any of the other substitutions off those two.
Midge came in.
Oh, yes, and Midge came in. That is, for example, a substitution I would have expected at halftime.
So you mentioned the Midge. Well, I just want to underscore a point, right? Because we talked about this at the beginning, and you said you would have brought Midge on at halftime. And yes, what was our problem? Stretching their defense.
Well, also the U.S. and like, so Jordan Angeli said this on the call, if y'all were watching the U.S. call, where she was like, the U.S. is playing within the confines of the 18-yard box.
Yeah.
And that like kind of broke my brain a little bit, because I was like, I thought about all the times where the U.S. struggled to score under Vlahko. Or weren't having natural attacking patterns under Vlahko. And it was like, what was it? They would literally like boot the ball out wide or get the ball wide and just cross into the box. Which is like, at times, is that the way to score your goals? No. But like, that's also like, I feel like modern soccer is like, that's like modern soccer 101 of like, get the ball wide, cross it into the box. Get the ball wide, cross it into the box.
So not only did we not address the width issue, we kept making it worse because Emily Fox was straight up a midfielder.
So two things with the subs and wanting Mitch to come in earlier. Or not even that. I don't know why Emily Fox became a midfielder. First of all, when you have Chris O'Donnell on the other side, and I will actually say the two people who I thought had better performances, honestly, well, three, because I thought outside of the first goal, I thought Alyssa Nair played well. Like, that, those two or three double saves that she had were, like really, really good. And I thought, I was like, Crystal Dunn was at least trying to make things happen. Sophia Smith also, again, like, while she wasn't, to be fair, necessarily connecting passes a ton, she was getting fouled. And so it's like, all right, your attack isn't working. Like, for some reason, it is, like, the attack isn't fluid, it's not working, you're not able to connect from basically defense through to the forwards, like, up the spine of your squad, honestly, because of this high press. The one thing you can do is, like, score off a set piece. Like, you go, you get fouled, you make something happen. Because also, we have seen that. Like, I think of, like, the NWSL smash and grabs all the time. Like, not even of, like, teams, like, necessarily sitting super deep, but, like, teams getting totally outplayed, and then they get, like, and then they get a free kick somewhere, make the most of it, and then end up winning 2-0 somehow, while the other team is throwing everything forward. But when it comes to, like, when it came to that game plan, I was like, why wouldn't you take Crystal Dunn, who plays as a midfielder, have her help the midfield? But also, I was like, and I was like, who, I was like, why didn't, if the U.S. wanted to do this, why didn't you put in a third center back? First of all, like, why Naomi Gurman did not start, it's a question we all had. We're like, why isn't she starting? Why isn't she playing? She's clearly a generational center back, but also she is, like, and besides all of her qualities, one thing that I, between Abby and Becky, lack at times is speed. And so when you have very fast, I mean, truly, a lot of Mexican players across the board are super quick, but especially their forwards are very quick. Why don't you have a center back that can deal with that? Also, my brain, I was like, should have called in Sarah Gordon, but that's a conversation for another time. But with that, I was like, if you had this plan, and to be fair, it's like something that we have seen at Chelsea at times, right? Where, like, you will have technically two center backs, but then one of your outside backs becomes a third center back, so that way you can, like, swing up one side of the pitch and have that outside back get forward. I was like, but two things. One, Emma Hayes has been handpicking players to do that from all the players around the world, which the U.S. quite simply cannot do. Not saying we're not deep, not players that don't fit that profile, but we're from, like, what we're doing right now, it's not like you can just, like, immediately go and pick anyone from around the world. But I was also like, why didn't you have a player like a Casey Kruger, who is very good going forward, very good 1v1, but if you need her too, can sit and stay as an outside back to almost play as a third center back. And so that's what I was deeply confused about. The U.S. being extremely narrow, deeply confusing, almost antithetical to everything that we've seen. I would say even going all the way back to the Jill Ellis era, which is getting players high and wide and stretching defenses and things like that. And I think Darian Jenkins might have said this, that, like, the U.S., like, were their own worst enemy this match. And I mean, I completely agree. They just, like, completely played into Mexico's hand, played in the way that Mexico wanted them to play, but then also were like, and I think this is probably the most concerning thing to me about this, is kind of the lack of leadership on the field. To me, there were no leaders on the field at all.
Which is interesting, because this was the most veteran lineup that they fielded so far, and it even got even more veteran heavy after halftime, so that's interesting.
Yeah, which also I was like, and I, you know, and it's a way you can manage games, right? Of, like, really, like, really big games. Like, you put in all your vets because you know they know how to deal with kind of the pressure and magnitude of this moment. And I think almost everyone on that pitch crumbled. We saw it for the first time, I think, in a really long time, like, across the board, everyone complaining to the ref. which normally when the U.S. plays, it's kind of the flip side, where you see whoever they're playing complaining to the ref. But it was like, I saw Rose complaining, I saw Lindsay complaining, I saw Emily Sonnet complaining. Emily Fox was complaining, but to be fair, when she was complaining, she had literally just gotten hit in the mouth. They literally like put a towel on the inside of her mouth. She's like, my mouth is bleeding.
She has an uncanny ability to like, every time she steps on a pitch, she also like gets into an MMA match. And I don't really understand how she does that all the, like, she's always getting hit in the head. And I feel bad for her. Like, it's not like trying to blame. It's just like random stuff happens to her.
She constantly gets clattered. And that's like the only way I can actually describe it. Like, she gets clattered multiple times a match. Every single time she gets on the pitch, she is just constantly getting hit. And I'm like, that just quite simply sucks. I especially notice on the U.S. Women's National Team, where she is just constantly getting hit. But yeah, I think out of this match, like, the thing that concerns me most, and I'm being kind of an Andre, I want to ask you this, of how much should we actually read into this result? The U.S. have made it through the quarterfinals, so they are progressing in the tournament, but also I'm like, the things that I'm concerned about are, like, really top-line things to be concerned about. Who are your leaders on the pitch? Who is getting this team together of, like, we need to be better collectively? Like, and also, like, fixing the small things. Because there were times where the U.S. was, like, super loose passing-wise and making silly mistakes. And, like, you know, for this program that shrouds themselves of these mentality monsters, where did it go? Where's the mentality that you're always telling us about? That never say die, we're going to show up 100% on the pitch. And not saying that they didn't show up, because I do think they were trying to do things, but were just like deeply incapable of doing so. But they also crumbled.
Well, this has been my issue with that whole, you know, never say die, don't give up. You know, that Disney movie-ification of the analysis that I think is really stupid, because I don't really care how hard you run, how many wind sprints you do before or after a game. It doesn't matter if your game plan is that wrong. It doesn't matter if you're not adjusting to what your opponents are doing. Like, players, like, other teams have technical abilities now. They have tactical things that they can do to bother you, and you have to be smart enough to put players in position. And also, you have to just physically be ready to match up. Like, one of the things that I thought was really, really unfortunate, and this is why I was really disappointed at the subs at half, was like a whole ass NWSL game broke out, and the team with the most NWSL players wasn't ready for it. And this, to me, is like an identity question about the U.S. program and where they want the women's national team to go. So, like, and no disrespect to Liga MX Femenil, like, I'm not saying that, like, high pressing and transition and forcing mistakes and those kinds of things are exclusive to the NWSL, but I am saying that a lot of these NWSL players are familiar with that style of play, that kind of game. So what they want to get into in the first place. But they were hamstrung by the tactics of the coach, of the setup that they were attempting to, and I don't really know what the solution was meant to be, because you wanted these really tight spaces, you wanted this quick passing in these corridors. The Mexico was just absolutely, like, you made their job very easy because you gave no width, everything was super, super narrow. And so if you already have a team that's super up for it, it feels like they can, like, end a drought. They can do something to kind of turn, like, Mexico needed a big statement win to be able to, like, turn things around. Their previous performances have been disappointing. And since the disappointment of the 2023 World Cup cycle, they've gone up and down. You know, we've talked about it before. They've changed coaches. They've brought in different players. They've done all kinds of things. And even in this tournament, there's a lot of noise about who they didn't bring in as well. So, like, they're not completely set, but they needed something like this, and they were always going to give maximum effort against the U.S. And you got to match that, you know? And that's the weird thing is, like, it's not, to me, it's not on the players to, like, you have to be set up to be able to match that. You can't be like, all right, our opponent is pressing us extremely hard, making things really compact, but we're going to keep trying these 3 to 5 yard passes and see what happens. Oh no, we turn the ball over again. And then again, same thing with like, again, people think I have something personal against her, but Lindsey Horan, just, it was another flashback, not playing midfield, wanting to be in the forward line. She was trying to receive passes behind the line, you know, trying to be hit with crosses deep at the back post. She's not the type of midfielder that scores a bunch of goals. She should not be the target in the final third. Maybe on a set piece on occasion when she's not blasting them in a rosy on free kicks. But like, that's not
the job. She hit the guy holding a hot dog.
Right. So like, that's not the job. We needed a box, but we needed another midfielder to help move the ball quickly. You can't move the ball quickly if you're outnumbered, and you can't move the ball quickly if you're in super narrow spaces and you're outnumbered and the team you're facing is high pressing and they're squeezing you from both sides. You know, the forward line and the midfield line are trying to compact you and take the ball. Like, these are just things that happen in the game that we never adjusted to. And then the reaction is to get older and slower at halftime. And that made no sense to me, because what you needed to do was, and I've just kind of like been waiting for, trust the kids. We keep going into this cycle of, oh, we're going to do a transition. Oh no, things get like, we have a game that's like really important, or we're not just playing around anymore, right? We have a competition that we need to respect, so we're going to put the veterans in. Then they get embarrassed, and now we're back to trying the kids again. And it's like, when are you actually going to empower the kids to do, like, be the ones to step up? Keep Sophia Smith out there, right? Keep, like, put Jaden Shaw out there. Like, tell, like, go. Put Olivia Moultrie out there. Go. Tell them to go. Like, go win the game. Figure it out. You have, like, a really good opponent. Do your thing. Like, this is tough. It is difficult. Obviously, tactically, you have to get it right as well. So I would say, like, you can't just put them out there and say go. But, like, do tweaks to help things with the shape, the team, what you're trying to do. And then trust the kids to get it done. Like you said, the most dangerous thing that we had seen was Sophia Smith dribbling at them.
And I just want to say quickly about the belief thing and just about the never say die attitude. I don't have a problem with that. It's like such a common trait across all sports. It's like, we're the underdog, blah, blah, blah. Like, not to bring it to the men's game, but like, I mean, I keep using that guy's meme of him leaving Liverpool saying, I'm running out of energy. And I'm like, maybe you and me both. But like, that kind of, I just, like, I mean, that never say die attitude, like, we can always find something out, is like belief. And like, belief is an extremely powerful motivator. And I think, honestly, I think this, the best way to sum up this match is a tale of two beliefs. Where you have Mexico coming up knowing they need to get a result, but with that, going off what you were saying, Andre, of them being set up in the right way and doing the right things, and then that belief carries you across the finish line. Where with the U.S., it was like, not only are you not being set up in the right way, the in-game tactical adjustments were not good, the substitutions didn't really make any sense. To be fair, the starting 11 also didn't make any sense. And then on top of that, you also don't have that belief behind you of like, we have been here before, we can do it again. And I think that, and like, that's why to me, like, when it comes to leadership on the pitch is what is most concerning, because I'm like, again, not to bring up these mentality talks, but I was like, there was, and I feel like in almost all the previous iterations of the U.S. Women's National Team, whether by like internal force or external force pushing them together, or maybe having beef and having the beef, having beef with others bring you together, it was like, we're going to go out and we're going to crack some skulls and take some names, no matter who we play. And it was like, I did not see that really on the pitch last night. And the weirdest thing about it too is I was rewatching the first half. And it was like the U.S., like, especially when it was still 0-0, like, the U.S. was trying some things out. Like, it wasn't, like, I feel like the U.S. really started to narrow, really, once Like, they started to really get narrow once they started to panic after that first goal went in. And then from there, that's when we saw them really get narrow. Like, when it was still 0-0, like, the U.S. was still trying to, you know, figure something out. Obviously, we were seeing Sophia Smith get on the ball. At times, we were seeing, like, if you want players to come back and move play, like, there was one or two times, where actually before Lynn Williams was getting taken out, where she was actually coming on the ball and then cutting inside and then having a really nice cross-field pass, where it was like, hey, if you want to beat a, again, beating a high press, that's how you do it. When you have, and not to harp on a player like Emily Fox, but if you, for example, had tasked a Crystal Dunn to do that, or even at times like a Midge Purse, like a player who is used to getting the ball and like also recognizing who was around them, because there were a few times with, I mean, it happened with Fox, it also happened with Sonnet, and at times Sam Coffey as well, where they, like, it was almost like, how do I describe it? It's almost like an old, like, Mexico between their forwards and their two midfielders. Almost like ovaling the U.S. Like, like, it was like an oval press. Their yeah. press. If you go back, like, it actually, it's like the players are almost like in an oval, and you have either. Them. Yeah, they just surrounded them. But the thing is, it wasn't like it was, those Mexico players weren't always touch tight. And so it was like, there were moments, especially on the rewatch, where I was like, Sam Coffey's getting the ball. There are players near her, but it's not like anyone is touch tight. And instead, she's just immediately playing the ball back instead of either her not recognizing or someone else near her being like, you can turn and try to go. And maybe that is a player like oh my God, I almost said an Olivia Smith. Look, I'm thinking about that young Canadian, they're wunderkind.
She's been balling.
But like an Olivia Moultrie or a Crystal Dunn or, you know, a Sophia Smith dropping deep. Or even at times I was like, Jaden Shaw would have eaten. And I know that maybe they kept her out because they didn't want her to get a second yellow card and miss the next match. Yeah. But like, I think that is just a game where she would have like thrived, or even, I know she's not on the roster, but like a Savannah DeMello would have like recognized that space and been like, you know, immediately try to turn and go at them, especially when, yes, they are pressing, but they're like, if you watch soccer, especially across the women's side and the men's side, you see teams like high pressing all the times. And there are very clever things you can do to get around the high press. And the most important thing is beating that first line of press, which the U.S., and I think that's what was kind of most frustrating, especially rewatching that first half, until the goal went in, is the U.S. was doing that. They were getting around that first press, but instead we're, like, passing the ball back and then, like, doing it again. Like, is it a biblical thing or mythological thing where, like, it's a boulder at the top or the bottom of the hill, and then he pushes the boulder up again, and then it rolls back down.
Yeah,
like that's how it felt. Where I was like, "You're so close to being there." And then it was like they would just like recycle the ball back to the center backs, and it was also like, yeah, I was just it was a frustrating watch, despite Mexico playing really well and doing all the things that they should have been doing and getting the very well deserved win. It was also like, U.S., you are not doing yourselves any favors in this moment.
I do see, like, or sense, I won't say see, I'll say sense, a hesitancy or a deference being paid to some of the team's leaders who are kind of meant to be, I guess, the leaders of the team, as opposed to taking that initiative on their own. We have seen enough of Sophia Smith already to know, if you let that child go, she's going to go. Like, what do we say about her all the time? What do you call her? Babyface assassin? Like,
the babyface assassin.
Like,
correct.
We know her mentality. We know what she's about. They doubted her about the MVP. She scores, what, how many minutes into the championship? Gives us the shrug.
22,
like,
I believe.
Yeah, like, she is, like, she's got that energy about her. Trinity Rahman has some energy about her. Like, yeah, she does the TikTok. She's funny and everything like that. But
look,
we've also seen her
square
up.
Double bubba, she's going to do something on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. We've also seen that energy from her, right? So, like, to me, it's just you have to have these players not feel like they need to defer. They need to have an environment where it feels like they're ready to step up and they're going to be relied on to do so and empowered to do so. And it didn't feel like it. And the reason I say that is because you're right. Like, when they would break that press, it was like, then what? And even when they got into attacking positions, it was like, oh, I need to like get the ball to like Lindsey Horan, or I need to like do something else. You know, Sophia Smith took like an early shot and then kind of didn't do much else. And obviously she was getting fouled a lot, getting surrounded. But like, there are ways if you empower the younger players to go out there and say, like, this is y'all's team now. That's what you need to do. That's how a transition works. Like, you have to find somebody from that group to say, and honestly, to me, like, make Naomi Girma captain, like, whatever. Like, I think that
period.
That's something. Yeah, I think that's something that just needs to happen just because of the transition in teams anyway, from the youth. But even more than the captain, I just think it's instilling the mindset that this is y'all's team now. Like, if we're going to go somewhere, we need great performances from you. We can't, like, we don't have better goal scorers than Sophia Smith, Mallory Swanson, Trinity Rodman. Like, we don't have better attacking players, Katarina Macario when she gets back. Like, that's it. If we're going to go somewhere, it's going to be those players going off. It's not going to be those players trying to tee up Lindsey Horan in the box. That's not a route to success. We've seen that how many times? We've been trying that route. It does not work. And so for me, I think there's that. But I also think there's a larger question about what the U.S. is trying to do. And this is where I wonder what, like, I know Emma Hayes has influence in terms of picking the squad, but I don't know in terms of tactics. I would assume she has some. And
I also have a question about that. I have the same question.
This is my question, because it seems like Twyla really wants this, like, quick passing, fluid passing, quick, like, 1-2 touch passing kind of style. And yeah, we've seen Chelsea do that on occasion, but Chelsea do whatever the hell they need to do to win a game.
Like, Chelsea, you cannot be like, Chelsea, we will see Chelsea come out in a 4-3-3. That's what they did last week.
Exactly.
I will be like, just kidding. I'm having 7 10s on the pitch, a goalkeeper and a striker. Then it's like, and we're just going to vibe out.
Exactly.
Like, and it's frustrating to watch too. We're like, what are you doing? And then it's like, Chelsea finds a way to win 5-0. And it's like, well, you know more than me. You know more than me, Chief, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and that's where I have the question, because it's like, what is supposed to happen in this transition? What is the aim? What are we building towards? What are we trying to do? And I would hope that there's a lot of input from Emma Hayes as well in terms of the direction, but this doesn't look too familiar to me. Like, that match, the way to handle it, Emma Hayes would have done pretty much the opposite.
Emma Hayes would have made a sub in the 27th minute.
Yes. Yeah. First of all, I don't think Emma Hayes would have done that starting lineup at all, but if she did, it definitely wouldn't have made it to halftime. Like, she would have made changes.
She would have made immediate changes.
Yeah. So, like, so that's why I don't understand, but also, like, the bigger picture, right? Where is the program going? Are we wanting to be this really intricate, technical, fluid passing squad? Or are we going to rely on our strengths, which is we got motherfucking athletes and we going to press you. We going to go at you. This is kind of my other thing with young players. Like, there comes a point where you can have a player like Alex Morgan who, when she gets to like the peak of her, like, career, she's going to be clinical, she's going to be quick, she's going to have a great feel for the game, and you're going to be able to get her like 3 to 5 chances a game, and she's going to convert at least one of them, maybe a couple at her peak, right? So that's like the ideal. These players are younger, they're not at their peaks yet. So what you actually need to do then is adjust for that. How do you adjust for that? Give them a lot of opportunities. It's what they get in the NWSL. That's why people talk about the transitional nature of it. But it's important. A lot of these players, they are high risk, high reward players, which is fine. They should be that. Given their age and their skill and ability level, they will grow. But you can't then you can't act like that's a negative thing right now. You just have to adjust the style and what you're asking of them. And the way to give them more chances is to press, is to figure out how do you get the ball wide? How do you continue to force Mexico to go side to side? How do you do those big switches to the other side of the pitch so that they can have a better numbers advantage when they do get the ball at their feet? Like, you need to be able to do a lot of these things to give them more opportunities, because that's where they really thrive. We see what Sophia Smith does when you get the ball at her feet. You give her five dribbles, she's going to, like, she'll probably get fouled on one or two of them. She may lose the ball on one or two of them, but there's going to be that one where she breaks through everybody and gets a shot on goal. That's what she does. So keep getting her the ball. Same thing with Trinity Rodman, that, like, the best version of Trinity Rodman is probably putting her on the left, letting her cut in on her right, and taking shots. That goal that Paleo scored, Rodman can score that goal. She has scored that goal before. And I think that's what you're looking for Rodman to do, or kind of like what Lauren James ended up doing. When she does cut inside, Lauren James, instead of taking those really deep shots all the time, she started pinpointing her passes. And we're not doing that because we're pandering to the wrong players in a moment where it should be clearly obvious that the peak you're going to get from them is basically what happened in the Sweden game.
Yeah, it's and that game was particularly rough because I was there and they were creating actually a lot of chances because Sweden was letting them. And then most of us just said have a game for life that we've never seen ever again. There were some interesting things also in this match, just kind of hitting on tactically, where it was like it felt Vlatko-esque, which I think we should never be.
Majorly Vlatko-esque.
There were also a few things that were, like, confusing to me. It did feel like a little bit like 11 players groupthink, which is never the way to set up your team. It was also very confusing where the U.S., like, I think it's something you can do for a club where you have one formation when you are attacking and a different formation when you are defending. I fundamentally think that's a bit hard to do when you are on a national team for the sheer nature of you do not have the same amount of time together. You're not together 5 days a week. At max, you're together for a month pre-World Cup. And then depending on how long you go into a World Cup, that's something very difficult to do. And there were some times that were very confusing to me because, like, the U.S. was kind of sitting in a mid-block in a 4-4-2. But the weirdest thing about it was is that the two up top were Smith and Lavelle, which I was like, why? Like, yeah. why isn't a Lynn there? Why isn't a Trinity Rodman there? Why are you having Rose and have to make mid-game sprints to get back to help the midfield? Because you don't, like... Because you decided to have instead your two players who we traditionally see as wingers sit on the wings in a 4-4-2, and then you push your 10 up. And so it was like that. Like, there were just several moments and several patterns of play that were confusing to me. There were so many moments, not to harp on it, but, like, where the U.S. would get around the first line of press, and instead of, like, traditionally being like, hello, we beat the press, let's go forward, like, someone would turn and pass back or pass or, like, have a square pass sideways, and it's like why aren't you going forward? Is it that you were told a very specific pattern of play? Like, at times it almost felt like the U.S. was, like, obsessed with like having possession at times, where it was like you're just passing the ball to pass the ball, you're not passing the ball to kind of have any type of, like, purposeful passing. And I actually have, Andre, I have a stat for you. So I was looking at pass completion, or no, I was looking at passes, because I think it, while possession doesn't always tell the story of a game, sometimes your passes can. And so I have some numbers for you, Andre. The U.S. attempted 466 passes. They completed 365. Mexico attempted 366 passes, but completed just 163. And that 2-1, essentially, that almost 2-1 ratio, or technically with attempted passes, it's like 3-4. I can't lie. That tells like a really big story to me, because I was like, and also just, and to be fair, I now have access to these stats. And so I was like looking at average position of a lot of these players too, and kind of the connections of who was passing to who. But I just think though that like that attempted passes number, it was like the U.S. again was just passing to pass the ball. Mexico completed half of the U.S.'s passes and left the game at 2-0 and had more shots on goal, and a higher XG. To be fair, XG is low, because to be fair, the two goals that Mexico scored off of were very low XG chances. Yes. You have a scorcher from outside the box, and then a looping shot that we see it go out of bounds more times than not. So it's like, of course, those are two very low XG chances. But the fact that the U.S. had 9 shots, only 1 on target, I think that should probably change to have rewatch the game. But Mexico had 13 shots and 4 on target, and dang near tripled the U.S.'s XG, says a lot about how they were playing, like the purpose in which they were making those passes or playing with, and how also the U.S. just couldn't penetrate. They were just quite simply at times just passing the ball to pass the ball. And it kind of reminds me of, like, I can't remember who it is, but, like, early eras was kind of playing out of the back, and how you'd see these teams put up, like, these, like, 900 passing numbers and still lose 2-0 off of 2 transition chances. But, like, to me, it was just, like, the U.S. was just passing the ball to pass the ball. And, yes, very occasionally we had really nice slip balls through. And, like, but again, not being on the same page, you didn't have anyone either making that run or... they like were making that run or that movement too late, and the ball rolls out of bounds.
Yeah, I just want to give a super shout out to like Mexico for just being like kind of a team after my own heart a little bit, you know, like the way that they played. I like that like intense press, and then, hey man, shoot. Like, this game is fun. This game is
shoot
dope.
Or shoot.
Like, yeah, shoot or shoot. It's the thing we love about Liga MX Femenil, as you talked about earlier. And I do think that shooting is a skill. And I do think that, like, even though I am a big proponent of XG, I think when you have enough data, like, expected goals is important. It kind of tells you the chances that a team is actually creating, like, the quality of the chances and all of that. Like, it can give you good information. But on a shot-by-shot basis, I still think that there aren't things that are taken into account, such as what does a long shot do? If a long shot hits the crossbar once, then what does that do to the defender the next time? Are they stepping up? If they step up, then there's space, right? So, like, psychologically, what does it do? If a keeper tries to save it and spills it, that creates another chance, a high XG opportunity. So it's not just the shot going in. And then, of course, the shot can also just go in. So, like, there's many, many reasons why I think you should learn and teach how to shoot from distance, because it does have valuable effects on a defense. And we saw that, because that's what they did. I mean, that's how they scored both of their goals in Mexico. And they were like 2 stunning goals. Like, if the U.S. had scored those goals, I wouldn't shut up about them. And so, like, because it happened to the U.S., I still got to be like, hey, that bangers. Like, I'm here for it. Like, I still think that Paleo goal, I've been watching that on loop ever since, because it's like perfect. Like, the setup, the step over, immediate to the shot, the curl she gets on it. Like, it is a classic banger. It's so dope. And
are you ready for a stat about her?
Play. I do. But I also want to say, like, real quick before you give the stat, it's just that joy of playing. And that's the thing that really, like, under Vlatko, I got very frustrated with him and talked about him specifically because the U.S. women's national team should never be boring. That team has given a lot of joy to a lot of people in this country. I'm one of them. That team has had some of the most uniquely talented footballers that we have seen in the women's game. It's fun as hell. They still have those talents, and have them playing a boring style is frustrating to me. And to see a team out there without the joy, without the excitement of, you don't know what they're going to do, but you know they're going to do something. We have those players. We've been watching them in the NWSL for such a long time. And even if they're young, like even if they're Trinity Robinson or Sophia Smith or Jaden Shaw, like we've seen these players do incredible things on the pitch in the NWSL. And why isn't it translating? And that's the question I think you really need to ask is, what are you asking of them? What positions are you putting them into? Why are they so tense, or why are they deferring in these situations, in these games? You need them to lead now. It's way too late. It's actually way too late. We don't have time to actually argue about it anymore. Like maybe in the run-up to the 2023 Olympics, we had time to argue about it because it was the 2021 Olympics or 2020 Olympics that were played in 2021. It was a build up to 2023. We did all that arguing. You know, Alex Morgan shouldn't be starting anymore. We got to find another eight. We got to replace Lindsay Horan, or not even replace her. We just got to find an eight that plays like an eight, or tell Lindsay, you got to be an eight. I'm sorry. You're just going to have to be an eight. Instead, the focus was always on Julie Ertz. And then Julie Ertz came back, and we still looked joyless and struggled, right? So it's just like we've seen this cycle. The solution isn't anything you've tried, yet you keep trying the same thing. The solution is let the kids play. Let them have fun. Set them up in ways that maximizes their talents. And sorry, I went on another rant, but give us that stat. Courtney.
For Paleo, she actually wasn't even called in on the initial roster. She was brought in.
Yeah, she was the replacement for Camberos, right?
Camberos, and yeah. It was in the youth national team system. One day on this podcast, we're going to have a fun game that you're all going to fail of who's in the U.S. women's youth team program who now plays for yet another country that's not the United States.
You won't fail it if you constantly guess that yes, they were.
Then you will pass the flying colors. I think that's also just something to really shout out. She wasn't even their first choice for this roster. Wasn't even first choice. But yeah, Andre, just kind of going off what you said of letting the kids play, and also one thing my brain keeps coming back to is having Nomi Official. I was like, Mia would have eaten.
Yeah.
She would have eaten. Why? Because she's played against these players day in and day out while playing for Tigres in Mexico. And obviously just gutted for her to have a torn ACL. Like, that just quite simply sucks. More than anything, that just quite simply sucks. And so, yeah, I really do think Mia would have eaten. And I was like, what we could have had. But yeah, just... when you were mentioning shooting, I was like, yeah, that's why we need Chris and Press back real bad, because shooting is still not, yeah. We have young players
and Cat can
and
shoot.
I was like, and Cat, but I was like, they also, one thing that they need to fix off this program is you have to start emphasize shooting.
Yes.
Have CP have summer camp. Bring everyone in and we're shooting the ball 100 times a day. Like, literally, just, like, you have to shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot, and it will, and, like, I think, and, like, we've seen it from Mexico. We've seen them attempt those shots before. I literally think about a player like Kristen Press and her coming in most of the time off the bench of the national team and still being one of, what, she's top nine, I believe, or at nine in terms of goals scored. For, like, that purely comes from honing your craft when it comes to shooting. That is something going forward that really needs to be emphasized. Kind of transitioning us to the rest of the tournament, this is a complicated bit, right? Sorry to go back to Mia Official, but like, Mia Official is out. I think before that, when you have a really, really young squad, you're like, all right, the expectation for the U.S. is always to win. I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. However, if that doesn't happen, it's going to be different. Versus the team that got beat last night was built by veterans of this squad. But yeah, there are a lot of changes that they're going to need to make to go forward. Because this tournament is heating up. Canada, all of a sudden, they're playing fun football. So surprised about that. Something I was not expecting fundamentally. They're playing fun football. Brazil is balling. Colombia is balling. Like, they're going to be team. If the U.S. comes up, let's say Puerto Rico makes it through. If the U.S. comes up, well, no, they won't because it'll be 4 or 5. But, you know, if the U.S., let's say, hits a Colombia, for example, in that quarterfinals, I don't think the U.S. gets through that the way they're currently playing. There's going to have to be some absolutely massive changes from this past game to the other for them to make it through. But it's going to be big questions for them going ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think my biggest thing and why I was so frustrated, I do think you had a good point about when Alex Morgan shows up, it changes the expectations for the tournament. Because, like you mentioned, Canada's been playing a lot of youth. They've been, you know, introducing new players. You know, Gabby Carl was barely getting minutes. She only got called in to the World Cup squad because of an injury. I don't believe she played any minutes at the World Cup. She's a spirit player who plays as a left back. She's played in all of their games, both their games so far, I believe. Starting, I believe, as well in both. So, like, or actually, I think she came off the bench in one, started in the other. But, like, to me, that's what this tournament should have been, is you have an opportunity to say, hey, let the kids take over. Either they're going to figure it out and do it, or they're not. I don't think the result is all that important in this sort of game or in this sort of tournament. I know that, like, that's anti-U.S. mentality, win everything all the time. But it's not really a symptom of how I feel about the team. It's a symptom of we've been very delinquent over a number of years now to actually press the button and do a full transition. So in order to do that, extremely delinquent. So in order to do that, you're going to have to eat a tournament. And you should just eat this one if you can. Like, if the kids win it, dope. You're ahead of schedule. Like, you're right back where you need to be. If they don't, okay, cool, learning opportunity before the Olympics. We got She Believes coming up as well. Like, this is not a tournament, not to dismiss it, but in terms of where the program is. I'm not saying dismiss it or don't do this because the U.S. is so good, it doesn't matter if they win. That's not where I'm coming from. I'm coming from, we've got work to do. And in order to do that work, you have to actually do the work instead of saying, like, panic, go to the vets because we got to win this. What's winning this going to do? If you can't play like this against, you know, what, Japan's going to be in the Olympics, right? We're going to find out if the European teams are going to be in the Olympics as well. Like, we've already seen us try to match up in the same way with some of these teams, and it doesn't work well. And so, to me, find something else. Like, find the next phase, find the next iteration, find the strongest version of this team and strengthen the players that are there. And that's not what we're doing, and it's extremely frustrating. But it is cool to see what other teams are doing. You mentioned Canada. I've been extremely impressed by Puerto Rico. I know they had a tough game, but that, they had one of the moments of the tournament.
Talk about belief.
Yes.
That team is filled with belief.
It absolutely is. That goal, that slip pass from Garcia. So was it Marcado who scored? Oh my God. God, that was such a good goal, and it was in stoppage time too, and the energy that came out of them. We saw Brazil, who had what? They had Jace, they had Dabinha, they had Ari all on the bench, and they took it to Colombia.
Guys?
Stop, please don't.
How many times can you butcher her name?
Yo, every single broadcast, it feels like there's like 9 different pronunciations, and I don't understand it, but like, they had those players on the bench and they still beat Colombia. Like, hey, man.
Dabinha didn't start.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is what you're supposed to be doing. This is fun. It's been dope. Paraguay has been fun as hell to watch, too. They got some, I call them tiny ballers. They got a lot of tiny ballers with low socks who just cut people up all the time.
Low sock ballers.
Yes, low sock ballers. It's been super fun. Like, I'm loving watching the rest of this tournament. I like the U.S. has been like an annoyance for this match, but like I'm kind of disappointed at CONCACAF because like these matches deserve way bigger attendances than they're getting. So I don't know what kind of like on the ground marketing they've been doing, but it hasn't been enough, and they haven't actually like, you can tell that they haven't understood what they have in this tournament. And the games have been dope. Like the games have been really, really good. And like, yeah, you had your blowouts, but still there are some teams and some performances that you're like, hey, I'll watch Colombia score 5 or 6 all day, right? I like watching that team play. I like watching Linda Caicedo do her thing. But like, apart from that, also, you've got some of these other teams that you might not be as familiar with that are out there balling. Like I mentioned, like a number of these teams are out there and they're putting on really awesome performances as well. And the games have been tight. They've been close. There's been a lot of skill. There's been a lot of, attacking play. Nobody's really sitting back unless it's one of these, you know, kind of like smaller teams that are in a different phase of building their program up and they're facing like a Colombia or Brazil. Then you'll see a kind of like a low block. But when those teams go at one another, like they're ready to show what they got. And there's a lot of skill, man, in this league and in Paraguay and CONMEBOL too. So like, not league, federation. So like, I've been happy. Like this tournament has been super dope and you can see how important it is and how much it's been necessary.
I mean, I think across the board, the games have been great. Seeing Colombia ball that, like Brazil-Colombia was really, really fun. I enjoyed every single minute of it. I was hooting and hollering the whole time. Especially when Rafaeli almost scored. I was like, ah! I was screaming.
Yo, she was on one in that game.
Like, no.
She was
like,
wild.
I was like, I think even though I was literally dying from getting glutened, that was what was distracting me from being glutened. I was like, someone should just have a live stream of me watching this game and I will just be high-pitched screaming the whole time because that's exactly what I was doing. Because I was like, Brazil was cooking, and Linda Caicedo would get on the ball, try to cook a little bit, and it was a good time. All right, well, that has been this episode of Diaspora United. We will not have Heated and Hyped. We'll probably say that for our next episode this week, because we're having a 2-pod drop week. Air horn. Where we'll, once the group stage finally ends, and we know the quarterfinal draw, we will come back and talk about it, because there are about to be some spicy matchups. About to see some good old spicy matchups. So thanks for listening. Andre, you have anything for the people?
Nah.
Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.